All right, we are in this crazy study that is the Passion Week of Christ. It would be Wednesday of the Passion Week. In 2 days' time, Jesus will be executed. He will be dead in a tomb. And it will appear that his entire first coming in ministry was a dismal disaster. And so what this section, and we'll end with this today, what this section is about is Jesus preparing his disciples and his people for this. He's letting them know that there's going to come a time when you're going to be drawn away. You're going to be tempted to give up on this thing. But I want you to know we're not done yet. In fact, I want you to know this thing's just begun. And so this is where we're going with it. What we're learning, I think, is that in this study and in the section that we're in, is that we've missed some truth. We've been somewhat deceived, and I'm hoping that we're seeing this and seeing it in the context in which it should be taught and which we should be receiving it. I'm hoping that we're getting that. I was at Life Group Wednesday night, and I had some people really messed up. I mean, they were so messed up, which is so good for me to see, because that just shows me you don't know what you believe. If I can stand up here and mess you up, then you don't know what you really believe, what you're firmed in. And so they were given some of the greatest questions. I mean, great questions. And really, I thought that was just great. You know, I want that. That's what I'm really after. They were asking some great questions, because this entire section is about questions. Jesus is answering questions about the topic in which you need to know about. So this whole section is about that. It's the most lengthy section of anything that Jesus gave about concerning anything. As I told you last week, Luke gives it 32 verses. Mark gives it 37 verses. Matthew gives it 2 chapters. He gives it 97 verses. Jesus didn't spend that much time explaining anything. Born again, heaven, hell, nothing. Not even the kingdom. He gives this more time. And so we have got to devote a little time to it so we can understand it. So, because it's that important to him. So what I want to do is, as I said, it's all around 2 specific questions. And so there is no way I can cover all that I've given you. I can't cover 4 pages of notes. I can't do that. I'm going to run as hard as I can, as long as I can. And then when it's time to stop, we'll stop. Okay. So let's just get going. Luke 21 verse 5. This is where it begins. Some of his disciples were remarking about how the temple. The temple is the center of this conversation. The temple was the center of the Jewish religion. How the temple was adorned with beautiful stones and with gifts dedicated to God. But Jesus said. Now, what is he talking about before I start reading? What was he talking about? What were the disciples talking about? The temple. But Jesus said, as for what you see here, the time will come when not one stone will be left on another. Every one of them will be thrown down. What's he referencing? What's he referring to being thrown down?
The temple.
Good. So it's all about the temple, right? Teacher, the disciples ask 2 questions. 1, when will these things happen? 2, and what will be the sign that they are about to take place? Everything, every single thing in this entire discourse and discussion is about those 2 questions. They didn't ask him, when's the end of the world? They didn't ask him, when was the rapture? They didn't ask him about the great tribulation that's going to come thousands of years later. What did they ask him? When is the temple coming down? And can you give us a hint? Because if it's going to be as bad as you say it's going to be, I don't want to be here. I want to get my family out of here. I want to get my friends out of here. That's what this whole thing is about. So that's where we got to stay in this specific context. Now, I would love to read back to you how he responded like we did last time. But the way Jesus began answering their questions was first by telling them what not to look for. What he began to tell them about was deceiving signs. Were deceiving signs. Not signs that was going to happen, but signs that would draw them away and trick them and deceive them. He said, false Christs are going to be coming. He says, they're going to be trying to tell you here he is and there he is and here it is and there it is. And don't believe them. He says, don't go after them. Don't follow them. And what we need to learn from that is we've got to be cautious as to who we set under for our teaching and our instructions for our family. Because there are deceivers out there. Right. Me too. Watch me. Watch me. All right, then he says this. He says, now they're going to trick you. They're going to try to deceive you. They're going to say there's wars and rumors of wars. And that's a sign of the end. You can go home today. Turn your television on. Gog and Magog, Russia, I knew it. It's time of the end. They've invaded the Ukraine. I know it. I told you. No, that's a deceiving sign, Jesus said. There's going to be earthquakes. There's going to be famines. There's going to be pestilence. Oh, those are the signs of the end of the time. No. Jesus says those are things that people will use to persuade you that the end is near. He says, but it's not. Those are deceiving signs. Don't follow them. Is what he said. Then he said, you're going to be personally persecuted. You're going to go through some hard times yourselves. Your family is going to turn against you. They're going to arrest you. They're going to flog you. They're going to kill some of you. But some of you are still going to be alive to see this thing go down. You're going to watch these stones dismantle. You're going to see what I'm about to tell you happen. So that he asked them this. So Jesus now begins to tell them the answer to their two questions. Number one, when? And number two, a hint of when it's going to happen. How can we know that this thing's about to come down? So let's pick it up where we left it off last time. Verse 20 of Luke chapter 21. When? Now what was the first question they asked? When? When you see America and China and Russia being what? Well, that's what everybody else tells you. When you see Jerusalem, let's stay in context. We got the temple and we got Jerusalem. When you see Jerusalem being surrounded by armies, the only armies that really mattered then was the Roman armies. When you see Jerusalem being surrounded by armies, you will know that it's what? America's or China's or Russia's or Canada's, or Mexico's. Whose? Who is it's here? Jerusalem and the temple. Jerusalem, its desolation is near. There's your sign. There's your sign. Then, get out. And, let me get up. Then, let those who are in America, I'm just trying to make you stay on course with me. In where? So we got the temple, we've got Jerusalem, and we got Judea. That's the context. Let those who are in Judea flee. What does flee mean to you? I mean, that means like go fast, right? Flee to where? To the mountains. And let those in the city get out. Now, this is contrary. Take it down for just a second. Because you see, what would normally happen is that you wouldn't get out of the city because it was the walled area. It was protection. That's where you would come for protection. But what Jesus is saying, don't fight for that temple. Don't fight for Jerusalem. Its desolation is near. Get out of here as fast and as quickly as flee. Going on. City out. Those in the country. Okay, and those in the country, not enter the city. Don't come here for protection. This thing's coming down. For this is the time of punishment. We're going to look at that word punishment in a moment, but I got to point something out here to you. A punishment in fulfillment of, well, most of what those prophets in the Old Testament said, you know, there's still going to be some left over so we can fulfill the book of Revelation and we can fulfill all the other stuff that's going to be happening. What does this say? All things, what? Look at it. That has been written. Now, what's he talking about here? The Old Testament, the prophets. All those things that they're going to tell you today. That they're going to go over there and reach something and pull something out of there, telling you that that's what's happening right now. No, it's not. It's either Jesus is telling us the truth, and he keeps having to tell us, I'm telling you the truth, but he's telling us the truth or he's not. This has all happened or it hasn't. Oh, where am I? All that has been written, how dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women. Isn't that an interesting thought? For pregnant women and nursing mothers. What's he saying that's for? Now, in Matthew's account of this, and I'm going to read this to you in just a few moments, but Matthew says, pray that it won't be winter. pray, mothers and expecting women, pray that it won't be winter when you have to do this. Why? Because you have a better chance of survival climbing a mountain and being a pregnant woman and trying to raise your child, though it is nursing you and existing and surviving in the mountains, than you have staying here in Judea and in Jerusalem. Get out of here. It's going to be extremely tough on you moms, on you expecting mothers. There will be great distress. Now, I need you to say that back to me just so it'll stick, okay? When we say something, it kind of sticks with us a little better. So what I want you to do is on the count of three, if everybody will say it at the same time, great distress, back to me, it's going to help us. One, two, three. Great distress. Very good. Thank you. I want you to see something. I think it'll help you. We'll be in great distress in the land and wrath. Whose wrath? And wrath against America. This people. What people? The people in Jerusalem. The people in Judea. The people around the temple. They will fall by the sword. Hold on to that thought. They're going to fall by the sword and will be taken as prisoners to all the nations. What does that mean? It means they're going to be taken into slavery. Jerusalem, not the world, not America, not China, not Canada or Mexico. Jerusalem will be trampled on by the Gentiles, other than Jews. Until when? Until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. That is a phrase, a brand new phrase, never before. That's a brand new phrase, and we don't know what it means, and we need to understand it. Okay, so I'm going to try to help us. Now, I ask you a question. If you were reading this for your very first time, with no external influence, nobody telling you what it meant, nobody trying to put their doctrine into you, how would it read to you? Would you really think that Jesus is here talking about America or China or the world? Or would you read that Jesus is really talking about Jerusalem and Judea and that temple? Which would you think? See, without any external influence upon you, you got it. But with all of this doctrine stuff, it messes us up. It leavens us. Jesus says, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. It messes you up. Now, what I got to do is I got to parallel this with Matthew's writing. And you got four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in your Bible. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are called parallel or synoptic Gospels. They're writing about the same stories, and all three of them are telling it from their perspective. It's like me telling you a story, and then somebody else who saw the same thing I saw, knows the same thing that I know, and they come in and tell you too. There's going to be some differences there. Right? I mean, it's going to be the same story. You know we're talking about the same thing. But one will have information the other doesn't have, and the other will have information this one doesn't have. And so this is what we got here in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Now, Matthew is here talking about the identical thing. The disciples come to Jesus, Matthew 24, verse 1. They look at this big temple. Man, this thing is awesome, isn't it? Jesus says, no, you don't understand. It's going to be taken down stone by stone by stone. And so they ask the same questions. When? Give us a sign. And the end of the age, they ask those questions. And Jesus does the same thing. He says there are going to be deceitful signs. And you're going to go through great persecution. Then he comes to this. And you'll recognize it immediately as I begin reading it. And I'm reading it purposely out of the King James Version. And I'll tell you why in just a minute. Matthew 24:19 through 21. And woe unto them that are with child, and to them that give suck in those days. But pray you that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall be, tell me, great tribulation. When is great tribulation? When was then? All right, now. The tribulation that people frighten you with and tell you is going to happen to you one day, is going to happen one day, has already happened. Happened 2,000 years ago. Destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. Google it. And Jesus gave specifics about it. Now, let me finish reading this passage. The great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no. And here's where everybody should shout. No, ever, nor ever shall be. Now, that's good news to me. That ain't going to happen again. Not like this. Well, Delbert, are you saying that we're not going to have a great tribulation, that we're not going to go through something? Not until the end of the time of the Gentiles. Is that what we read? It's not going to happen any minute. So we got to understand it. And now that's why I read it out of the King James Version, is because it says Great Tribulation. If you read this, and if you have an NIV in your lap, if you look at it, tell me what it says. It says Great Distress. It's exactly what Luke said. How Luke read, that we just read over there. All I'm wanting us to see is that we have been messed with. And we can continue to be deceived by deceitful signs. And what I want us to understand and grasp and get our heads wrapped around is, listen, we've got to be cautious what we so gobble up and let television preachers preach to us and do to us. And then I'm included into this. I'm a television preacher. And you get in this thing yourself. Read it. All right, I got to flee here. Jesus said, He said, this is the time of punishment. And I emphasize this in fulfillment of all that has been written. Now, believe Jesus or not. You believe these television guys and preachers, or you can believe Jesus. He says it's all fulfilled. And either it was or it wasn't. That's what you've got to come to the conclusion. But I want to look at this word punishment. Punishment here. And the King James Bible interprets that days of vengeance. I like vengeance maybe a little bit better, but both are accurate. But it's going to be the days of vengeance or punishment for Jerusalem and Judaism, not for the whole planet. And I want you to show you what the Greek word here means. Adikasis. And what it means is a revenging, a vengeance, and a punishment. Now, Jesus is saying it. Jesus, the Son of Man. Not the Antichrist. Jesus, the Son of Man, not the Antichrist, would take revenge and vengeance and punishment, execute upon the Jewish nation. Why? Why? See, this is what we've got to understand why. He told us. And in Matthew's gospel, Matthew gets into it way more than Luke did. But in Matthew chapter 23, Jesus went through there 8 different times. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees and hypocrites. Woe unto you. He comes down and he says, you're a generation of snakes. Your parenting was snakes and poisoned you. You're poisoning your generations following you. You're a generation of snakes. And he says, your house is left to you desolate. And then he says this, Matthew 23:34. Therefore, because of that, because you're a bunch of snakes, I am sending you prophets and wise men and teachers. Some of them you will kill and crucify. Others you will flog in your synagogues and pursue from town to town. Did that happen? Yes, that happened. Right? And so, here's why. And so, the results of that. And so, upon you will come all the righteous blood that has been shed on the earth. Horrible translation, right? We talked about it last time. All the gee. All right, but that's not what I want right now. From the blood. Look what's going to be put on them. Look what vengeance and punishment is going to come on them. From the blood of righteous Abel, all the way back to Cain and Abel, blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Barachiah, whom you murdered between the temple and the altar. Here it is. I tell you the truth. I guess he does have to keep telling us. He's telling us the truth. I tell you the truth. All this will come upon. I don't know how else you can read that. This generation, before this generation's over, all this that I'm talking about here, every bit of it, is going to come upon it. Did it happen? Yes, it did. Jesus gave explicit details here, amazing details, as he talked about it. It would come upon their generation before that generation passed. In AD 70, the Roman armies had invaded across the Euphrates River, came down through Samaria, Galilee, Samaria, and into Judea. They had circled Jerusalem, just exactly like we read, circled Jerusalem and sieged it. Could not get food in there. People were starving. After several months, they were starving. In AD 70, on August 9th, the Roman armies finally broke through the walls, came in there. The people were so weak, they couldn't fight. It was a slaughter by the sword, just like he said. They're going to die by the sword. They took men outside and crucified them all around until they ran out of lumber to crucify them on. They slaughtered, they killed women, children, babies, infants, pregnant women. It was horrific. 100,000 people, Josephus said, died. Who wasn't killed was taken off into slavery, taken off to all the nations, just exactly like Jesus said would happen. And they began to dismantle that temple stone by stone by stone. Beautiful, gorgeous stones taken and used in the Roman Empire. Just exactly like Jesus said happened. AD 70, just before that generation ended. Google me. Not me. Google at War of AD 70. See if I'm telling you the truth. Before that generation passed, everything he says here took place. Everything happened. Every single bit of it. Now, Jesus said also, until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. What does that mean? What does that mean? No longer will that temple, see, that temple was the central aspect of that Judaist religion. Without that temple, you got nothing. There's no feast, there's no Passover feast, there's no Pentecost feast, there's no feast of bread, unleavened bread, there's no feast at all going on. There's no sacrifices going on because you have to do all this at the temple. There's no priest, there's no priest then, high priest, low priest, chief priest, no need any priest because there's no temple. All of it's done with. No longer would God use that temple in Jerusalem as the center of what he was doing in the earth. What he's now using, what he began using after this took place, Gentiles. People that are not Jews. People like you, like most of us are. People like the Gentiles. He primarily began to use them. Now, how long has he been doing this? He says, this is going to start the time of the Gentiles. Is that what he said? It's going to be this way until the time of the Gentiles comes to an end. We are in the time of the Gentiles. So what he said has already happened. We are in the time of the Gentiles. And what now, what we are using, what God is using is us. It's us. And nothing's going to happen. There's not going to be anything devastating. The end of the age will not come until the time of the Gentiles is fulfilled. When are we going to have a great tribulation? When are we going to have the rapture? When are we going to have the resurrection? When the time of the Gentiles is fulfilled. How am I doing? Is this all right? Good? All right. And it's right here where most teachers leave the context and they jump thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Even if you can show them and convince them that Jesus is really talking about the temple and Jerusalem and Judea, then they want to get here and they want to jump. And I want to show you why. It's because of how we translate specific words and how we don't do our research and study these things. Let me read it to you and then I'll talk. Verses 25 through 26, Luke 21. There will be signs. Would you say back to me signs? Just on 1, 2, 3. Signs. There will be signs in the sun, moon, and stars. Now, does he say the sun and the moon and the stars are going to fall? What does he say? They're going to give us some signs. Okay. Signs of the sun, moon, and stars. On the earth, nations will be anguished and perplexities at the roaring and tossing of the sea. Men will faint from terror, apprehensive of what is coming upon the world. For the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Okay. All right, now... Why in the world, Jesus being the amazing teacher that he is and was, why would he suddenly throw these guys a curveball who have asked him two simple questions, when and signs, and suddenly jump thousands and thousands and thousands of years in the future? They didn't ask him when was the end of the world. They didn't ask him when was the end of time, when was the end of humanity. There's no reason, there's nothing provoking him to jump and to get out of context. Nothing at all. And I want to show you that he's not out of context. It's just how we translate things and how we not do our study and our homework as we should do it. So I want to talk about this. So I've got to show you two things here. First of all, this sign thing and sun, moon, and stars and sea and all that stuff. And then the second thing, that word world. Help us with that just a little bit. Now, he says the signs of the sun, moon, stars. The signs of what does that mean? So what do they represent? What are the signs of them? What do the sun, moon, and stars represent? Well, if you go all the way back into the book of Genesis, what you'll find there in the book of Genesis is God making a covenant with Abraham. And what he tells Abraham is that your seed, Abraham didn't have a kid, didn't have a child. But he says, your children, your children are going to be as the stars of the sky and the sand of the sea. That's how many you're going to have. He said the same thing to Isaac, who became Abraham's son. He said it to also, Moses also said it to the people. God said he's going to make us as the stars of the sky. So what I'm wanting you to see is that just because it says stars, it's really not talking about stars. It's talking about people. All right? I want you to start getting what does this mean? Now, whenever this is used, whenever this type of language is a prophetic language, and it's called collapsing universe language. Collapsing universe language. What that simply means is it's talking about the universe, but it's just a language to depict what he's really amplifying and wanting to say to us. Implicating. Yeah, that's the word I was wanting. So this is what. I want to show you a couple of this. Your Bible's full of them, from Genesis 2 and through, all about Revelation. But here's what I want you to see. In Isaiah 13:10, that God is speaking through the prophet Isaiah, and he's saying Babylon's coming down. So here's what he says through Isaiah. God says to Babylon, the stars of heaven and their constellations will not show their light. The rising sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. And then a little further. Therefore, I will make the heavens tremble. Ooh, that's bad. And the earth will shake from its place. The earth is going out of orbit. At the wrath of the Lord. Now, what is the real sign here? What is this terminology, this collapsing universe terminology? What does it really say? It says God's mad, right? He's the wrath of the Lord. Look on. The wrath of the Lord Almighty, and of course that's all uppercase, so that's Yahweh, Jehovah, we would say. Almighty, the Lord Almighty in the day of his burning anger. So those signs that they were given isn't really talking about the earth coming out of its orbit. Had that happened, none of us would be here. Because this took place in 539 BC. Babylon came down. And had this happened, nobody would be here. So we're not talking about the earth and the sun and the moon and all the stuff falling. And by the way, if one star hit this planet, we're a tiny little planet. One of those things whack us, it's over. So we're talking about a language here. What are we really saying? We're saying lights out. When sun, moon, stars don't give their light and everything's shaken and moved, we're saying lights out for you, Babylon. It's over for you. This system's over. Let me do you another one. Ezekiel 32, 7 and 8. Now what's happening here is God is speaking through the prophet Ezekiel. It's prophetic language. And God says this, when I snuff you out, talking here to Egypt and Pharaoh, when I snuff you out, that's just deep. I will cover the heavens and darken their stars. I will cover the sun with a cloud, and the moon will not give its light. All the shining lights in the heavens, I will darken over you. I will bring darkness over your land, declares the sovereign Lord. Lights out, Egypt. Lights out, Pharaoh. This happened. The Persians conquered Egypt in 525 B.C. And Alexander the Great, a little later, conquered Egypt in 332 B.C. Everything changed. No more pharaohs. So when this language is given to us, it's a collapsing universe. Their worlds ended. It collapsed. Lights out, Israel. Lights out, Jerusalem. Lights out, temple. Here's you one more in Judges 5:19 through 20. Talking here, the kings came and they fought. The kings of Canaan fought at Tanakh by the waters of Megiddo, but they carried off no silver, no plunder. From the heavens, the stars fought. Did that really happen? Or is this collapsing universe language? Stars fought. From their courses, they fought against Caesarea. Now, what we're talking about is wars, nations at wars, kings battling. The Roman army's coming in. Stars are going to be fighting. Book of Revelation talks about it in chapter 12. There's a war in heaven. Michael and his angels waged war against the devil and his angels. And there's a war. So when Jesus is saying this, he's using metaphoric language. He's using proper prophetic language. They knew what he's talking about. We don't. We're expecting the stars to fall. We're expecting all that kind of stuff that we've been told. Jesus was saying, lights out, Israel. Lights out, temple system. Lights out, Judaism. It's over. It's over. I don't want to throw this in here, and I'm not at it yet. I'm not to it yet. But what I want to do is I want to put it here just to bring in a thought. And in Luke 21, we'll get there in just a few minutes, if maybe. And in verse 32 and 33, it says this. Jesus says here, I tell you the truth. This generation, the generation to whom he spoke, will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. How many of these things? The stars shaking and the earth, the lights and all this stuff that he just said. How much of it would happen? All of it would happen before, prior to that generation. They will have already have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. Who do you want to believe? Who do you want to believe? He says all these things will happen before their generation ended. It was lights out for Israel. All right, then he says this, and I'll get this one. Men will faint from terror, apprehensive of what is coming on the world. Now, when we think world, we think planet. Our world is huge. Our world is large compared to their world. Do you think they thought the planet? They didn't even know there was a planet. Am I right? I mean, their world was the Roman Empire. That is what their world is. And that's amazingly what the word means. Let me show it to you. Okonomi. There you are. World. At the largest expanse of it is the inhabited earth. Now, that alone tells us it's not the planet, because 2/3 of our planet is water. So we're just talking about the inhabited earth at its largest expanse of the meaning of the word. And the King James Bible here actually says earth. So it's an inhabited earth. The portion of the earth inhabited by the Greeks, in distinction from the lands of the barbarians. Now, this is what they're thinking, world. The Roman Empire. All the subjects of the empire. This was their concept of world. Now, Jesus knew what the world and planet was. I'm not saying, but he's talking to them. He wants them to understand this thing. Now, I'm going to show you a couple of scriptures again, like we do. But in Luke chapter 2, Jesus is about to be born. Joseph's got Mary heading for Bethlehem. And let's read here in Luke 2:1. In those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that the census should be taken in the entire Roman world. Same word. Economia. Here, it's translated entire Roman world, but in the verse that we read in Luke 21, it says the whole world. And it throws us into a tizzy. We don't get it. We don't understand. Caesar didn't tax the whole world, did he? No, just the Roman world. Acts 7, it's used, the same word is used and translated the same way entire Roman world in Acts 11:20. I've got you that. Let me read you 17:6 in Acts. Acts 17:6 says, but when you did not find them, when they did not find them, they dragged Jason and some other brothers before the city officials, shouting, these men who have caused trouble all over the world, Okonomia, had they? Had they caused trouble in America? Had they caused trouble in... No, just the entire Roman world. Now, they had caused some stirring in the entire Roman world. And they've come here too. So what I want you to see is that this word world does not mean planet. It was their world. It was, and I've got you all kind of references listed here that you can research that all on your own. But one of the main places that this word is used is the book of Revelation. Oh, my God, Delbert, you're going to tell us that the book of Revelation's already happened. Oh, no, you're messing me up. I'm not going to tell you that today, but you got enough today. Well, what about that Antichrist thing you said a while ago? What about that? Has that happened? Has Antichrist already come? Oh, Delbert. Oh, no. Well, I'll give you a little homework. Go home and took the book of Revelation, get your concordance out, whatever. Look up how many times the word Antichrist is in the book of Revelation. I'll give you a hint. None. It ain't there. No, no, that can't be right, Delbert. Read it. Find out. But you do need to jot this down and write it. I don't have it in your notes. But you do need to look at 1 John, not St. John. 1 John chapter 2, verse 18. And tell me what that says. And you're going to find out there, Antichrist has not only come, but there's a bunch of them. Okay, here we go. Stay on course, Delbert. Stay. Look at 21:27 there, Luke 21:27. Jesus wasn't out of context, is my point here. Jesus hadn't left us, he hadn't jumped thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Verse 27, at that time they will see the Son of Man. Now that's important. Anytime you see the Son of Man, that means something. The Son of Man coming in the cloud. Coming in what? A cloud, light, fluffy little cloud, right? Jesus got a riding on the cloud. Is that what that means? Coming in the cloud with power and great glory. Now, the cloud is an interesting study, and we've done it several times here, and I've got you lots and lots of references, but it simply means the presence of God. And it could be the presence of God in a good way or the presence of God in a bad way, but it's the presence of God coming. Now, we've already read about the wrath coming, but also it means the good presence of God. Remember when the children of Israel came out of Egypt, they followed the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. That's a good cloud of protection. But this is bad time here, what Jesus is talking about, right? And when you say the Son of Man, what Jesus is doing is he's referencing himself to Daniel and the cloud. Let me read it to you quickly, because this, you just need to know this. In Daniel 7:13-14, it says, in my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was one like the Son of Man. There he is, coming with the what? The clouds of heaven. So there they are. This is what we're talking about. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. There's the presence of God. He was given authority, glory, sovereign power. All peoples, nations, and men of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away. And his kingdom is one that will never end. Not for 3.5 years, not for 7 years. Never end. And I want you to see here is this is what Jesus is talking about in his coming in the cloud here in judgment isn't him coming for the rapture of the church. He isn't coming in the resurrection of the saints. He's coming in judgment. He's bringing his kingdom, and we're going to read it in just a few minutes if we have time. But he's coming in judgment, and he's coming in a way that will initiate to bring the. You'll know the kingdom of God is near, is what he's going to say, and I'll explain that. But there's always the kingdom of God associated with the Son of Man and his coming. I'll show you more about that in just a second. But it's, in Daniel, what we read here is about the ascension of Christ coming before the Ancient of Days and receiving his kingdom. You can also read about that in Revelation chapter 5, where the Lamb receives a scroll that's written on within and without from the one that's sitting on the throne, and all that stuff happens. The seals are opened. The four horsemen of the book of Revelation come out, and vials and trumpets and all that stuff happen. There's a connection is what I'm wanting you to see. There's a connection with what Jesus is saying here and that book of Revelation. And I haven't got time to do that. Why did I do that? I don't know. But anyway, Matthew 26:64. This is a very interesting passage. Jesus says, you're going to see the Son of Man coming on the cloud. Now, this is what I'm about to read you. We're going to be studying it in a couple of weeks because Jesus will be arrested. He's going to go through 6 trials. Now, the first 3 are with Israel, Annas, Caiaphas, and then the Sanhedrin. Jesus won't talk. They just keep asking him, are you the Christ? Are you the Son? And finally, Caiaphas says in front of the Sanhedrin, I demand you in the name of God, in the name of the Lord God Almighty, are you the Christ? And to that, Jesus answers this in Matthew 26:64. Yes, it is as you say, Jesus replied. But I say to all of you. Now, who is he speaking to here? I say to all of you, Caiaphas and the 70 people in the Sanhedrin. I say to all of you, extremely important, in the future, you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of God, the Mighty One, and coming. They were going to see this and coming on the clouds of heaven. They knew what he meant. Caiaphas rent his garments at that time. They knew what he meant. What did they see? What did those people in the Sanhedrin, what did Caiaphas, what did they see? They saw Jerusalem circled about with the armies of Rome. They saw that walls come down, that temple come down. They saw all those people massacred. That's what they saw. That's what Jesus is telling us here. The tribulation that preachers have you all messed up about, it's already happened. Verse 28. Time is it? 3 minutes. when these things happen, begin to take place. I got to do this one. When these things begin to take place, stand up, lift up your heads, because you are what?
Redemption.
You're what?
Redemption.
Okay, so I've got to wait until the rapture of the church. I've got to wait until the resurrection of the dead. I've got to wait until a great tribulation before I can have my redemption. That's what that says. If you go with popular interpretation. It can't happen until this happens. But if this has already happened, the blood of Jesus Christ redeems me. Redemption, there's your definition. I'm not going to get into it, but it just means they're going to be set free. They're going to be liberated from that legalism, that law, that temple worship. They're going to be set free. They're going to be liberated, redeemed from that thing. Aren't you glad? All right, 29 through 33. He told them this parable. Now, look at the fig tree and all the trees. And a lot of people want to get hung up on the fig tree. They think it's Israel. It's not, because he says all the trees. It's obviously not what he's talking about there. When they sprout leaves, you can see for yourselves and know that summer is near. Now, does it take a rocket scientist to walk out those doors, look at the crepe myrtles? They're blooming. What does that mean? Summer's here. Near Israel. It's right here at us. That's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. Even so, when you see these things happening, when you see the armies invading, when you see them coming around, you better have already been gone, because it's coming down. When you see all these things happening, you know that the kingdom of God is near. Now, I just want to deal with this just as quickly as I can. I tell you the truth. This generation will not, this is where this verse is. This generation will certainly not pass until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. Now, the kingdom of God, he says, you'll know it's near. How can it be near if it's already here? Just quickly, I'll share this with you. This would be Wednesday in real time that we're studying here. Jesus would be saying this on Wednesday. The next day would be Thursday. On Thursday, what he's going to do is have the Last Supper. We call it the Last Supper. It really is the supper that terminated the Passover or the Old Testament and instituted the New Testament with the communion. And when the nation of Israel came out of Egypt in bondage, they had Passover. Passover instituted that covenant. That covenant, the old covenant. We call it the old covenant. It wasn't old to them. That was their covenant. It instituted that covenant. But it took a whole generation, did it not, before it was instituted? They finally crossed over. That generation had to die in the wilderness, remember? And they finally crossed over the Jordan River, went back in, new circumcision, instituted the Passover again. And so it was actually consummated a generation later. And this generation that we're reading here, this generation is going to have to pass. All this is going to happen before this. This was a transition generation. This generation had to die. This generation had to die in the wilderness. It was a transition generation. This generation is going to pass. Then the kingdom is going to come in its fullness. And we're going to be thrust out. When this happens, and what I really want us to get is this is an amazing moment in the timeline of God. What the coming down of the temple really did was end that. And begin this. We're in a different age. And that's what it did. All right. So I'm going to stop. He gives them a final warning. If you just want to look at that. He says, be careful. Put that up, Galen, while I'm talking about it. Verse 34 through 36. Be careful. He's talking to them now. He says, be careful or your hearts will be weighed down with dissipation. What does that mean? It means debauchery. It means indulgences and lewdness. He says, you're going to get into addictions and drunkenness. He said, and anxieties of life. These things are going to be weighing you down. Because it's going to be nearly a generation before this is going to happen. And he says, you're going to think I'm not coming. You're going to think I just lied to you. You're going to be thinking that I was wrong. But just be careful. And that day, because if you allow this stuff to draw you away, that day will close on you unexpectedly like a trap. Like a trap. It's going to get you. What's the trap? Jerusalem, Judea. For it will come upon all those who live on the face of the whole earth. And we talked about that word last time, so I don't have time. I showed you what it meant. I showed you how it works into here. Be always on the watch and pray that you may be able to what? To escape all that is about to happen. And that you may be able to stand before the Son of Man. Jesus is worried about his guys. He said, listen, guys, it's going to appear that, you know, it was all for nothing. It's going to be a generation before this happens. And he says, I don't want you getting lost in this thing. I don't want you getting hung up on different things, the dissipations of life and the anxieties of life and getting all into addictions and things. He said, listen, he says, if you do that, you're going to get trapped in this thing and you're going to die. I don't want that to happen. I want you to escape. And so all of this, he comes to, that's the last verse in this thing. So he says all of this for them, that they can escape what's about to come in that generation. Now, finishing up, how about you and me? Do you ever look at the world and you see them out there in their dissipations, you know, in their indulgences, you know, in their debauchery, and it seems like they're having so much fun. You know, and they're all into their addictions and drunkenness and drugs and they just look like they're having a ball. And the anxieties of life, do they not weigh us down? So many of us right now are weighted down by the anxieties of life. Do you ever consider, I'm just going to give up on this thing. I don't know about this God thing anyway. You know, I know is what he said. I know that's what the preacher, I know, but I don't know. I just think I want to stay home today. Ever feel like that? Jesus says, don't. That's a trap. And it will slaughter you. But not only will it slaughter you, it will slaughter your family. It'll slaughter your spouse. It'll slaughter your children. It'll slaughter your grandchildren. It'll slaughter pregnant females in your family. It'll slaughter your lineage. Don't do that. Stick tight with me and pray. Stick tight with me and pray. Because if you'll stick tight with me and you'll pray, you can escape so much of what all of these others are going to be destroyed by and slaughtered by. How are we doing? We don't have to go through all that stuff. We can escape it. But we can't be caught in the trap. Let me pray for you. Father, thank you for